From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. Martial arts, does it pose a danger to young children who engage in it?
It would pose a danger to me. What else do we have?
That's exactly it as a child. Abortion rates fall. What does that mean? We'll talk a little bit about that and what that means for birth control in our society.
And our recipe today, or recipes today.
Recipes. It's a trifecta. They're healthy holiday dips. Yes, you can make your holiday dip healthy today and delicious.
That sounds great. Well, to the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us in Oklahoma City. Where else? Oklahoma. Hi.
Yeah, my question is in regards to constipation in kids. I see kids with restrictive diets as a feeding therapist, and constipation is a huge problem for this population. It's like a vicious cycle of Miralax and suppositories, and it can get kind of crazy. So I was just wondering if you could give me some natural alternatives to Miralax that are safe for kiddos.
Now, did I hear you right? We're not talking about your kids. You're seeing kids as a therapist?
Correct.
Uh-huh. So you're a dietary therapist, or tell me a bit
more. I'm actually a speech therapist, and I see kids that have oral aversions or autism or severe reflux, something that's caused them to restrict their diet in some way. And in general, they eat things like rice and corn and Cheetos and yogurt and milk and dairy and bread.
Wait a minute. Cheetos, I assume, are not on the recommended list there. That one stood out to me.
Right.
Cheetos certainly are not. They're not one of the four basic food groups. That's
right. But they are for these kids.
Yeah, they are for sure. What are their ages? What ages do you see these kids?
I treat children from ages 0 to 3.
Okay,
so
0 to 3.
Birth until 3. And it's usually the toddlers that we start getting into this constipation kind of cycle.
Right.
Thing.
And by the way, that is not unusual, especially even for kids who do not have speech problems. Constipation in children is not a small issue. It's a common issue that's there. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Miralax. What's going on with that? Miralax is an over-the-counter medication for people who have never heard of it. It's what we give in large quantities when we're going to do a colonoscopy. So in other words, if you take enough of it, you actually induce diarrhea. It's been a new go-to drug for lots of people who have constipation problems with children. What happens when they take a little bit of it every day?
Well, so what I see is they'll take the recommended dose for a few days, and then about once or twice a month, they'll get really backed up. They'll need a suppository, or they'll increase the dosage, and then they'll go back to kind of this cycle of not pooping regularly. Dosing is hard for me.
So the Miralax has been difficult. You think it's difficult to get the parents to actually get the child to drink the Miralax? Do you think that's part of it?
Sometimes, yeah. What I do is usually recommend that they take it in like a milkshake or something that we
know
that they'll drink.
Right. You know, there's also an old remedy called Malt Soup X, which was basically a malt sugar that we would often give, which also would help with constipation. Have you ever used that at all? Malt Soup X, that was one thing. It's a more natural product. It still is a refined product. It's still something because, you know, all the foods that you mentioned, of course, that these kids will eat are basically refined foods. You know, the texture and textured version is really also part of the issue. What happens if they eat corn? Because corn, when they can eat corn, can be very, very good. Corn and raisins are excellent, excellent natural ways to stimulate bowel movements. Do they eat much in the way of raisins?
Not that I know of, but that's definitely something we can work on in therapy.
Raisins
are sweet. I think they might
Raisins are awesome. I mean, raisins are, you know, they come in the little boxes, those little sun-kissed raisin boxes. Kids often like it because they take it, put it in their mouth. It's a very natural product. Obviously, it's a natural product. And that's something that's a very natural way to, you know, to induce constipation. The other issue with constipation also has to do often with fluid intake. Kids who are constipated often just don't drink very much. And so So changing, getting a water bottle that they will drink out of, taking a liquid in there that may be like water, or even putting some food coloring in the liquid so it looks red or it looks blue or it looks green, if they like it hot, if they like it cold, because you're dealing with different food aversions, can then increase their fluid intake. If they don't have enough fluid, they are going to be constipated.
And what I'm wondering, Zorba, is when I hear the list of foods on that restricted diet, I'm not hearing a lot of fiber, except maybe in the corn she mentioned. Right. Is that part of the story here, do you think?
Well, I think that is part of the story. Part of the story is the fact that fiber is often kids that things have adverse to. Think about what you had as a kid. You know, you would have cereal, you would have white bread, you would have all these things that usually have less fiber. And kids who have structural problems or kids who have problems with autism or have other problems and connective problems often will still eat less fiber. But increasing fiber is very difficult. You know, from a bread point of view, you can try to get them to eat whole grains, but that's the toughest part of it.
It is really tough.
The other thing is broccoli. Some kids who will not eat other vegetables will eat broccoli because they like the way it looks. It looks like little trees. Oh. And so if you do broccoli with some kind of a dip that they will like, that may contain some cheese in it, because kids will often do that, that they may eat broccoli, that is another fiber that the parents may not be thinking of that may help.
What about fruit juices? Is there a particular juice that you would recommend?
You know, fruit juices, you know, the problem with fruit juices is they have calories in them, they have no fiber in them, and the calories are then going to satisfy their appetite, and therefore they may not be the best thing for them. I would, other than a very small amount of fruit juice, I'm just anti-fruit juice because they're a high carbohydrate load. Apple juice is a perfect example. It's sweet, it's sugar, it has no fiber in it. Orange juice, give you a good example about orange juice. My wife and I recently came back from Paris. Unfortunately, we had a friend in Paris that we had to see, so we had to get on an airplane, fly to Europe.
It's rough.
Fly to Europe, go to Paris. And I went to a store that was right near our hotel, and there you could buy fresh squeezed orange juice, and it came out of a machine, and the machine squeezed the oranges in front of me. And what impressed me was how many oranges it took to produce a little 6-ounce bottle of fruit juice. It was a ton of oranges. So it's much better for them to eat an orange, like a little mandarin orange, that they will eat because they'll get the fiber, and I would stay away from fruit juice. Too satisfying and too little fiber.
Okay. All right. I hope that gives some extra tools in your toolkit with those kids
yes,
you work with.
Yes, it definitely did.
Well, good luck
Thank
to all of them.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for your call at 1-800-462-7413. Well, let's get into one of our topics today, Zorba. This one, martial arts and kids. The American Academy of Pediatrics says dial back, especially the contact training at an early age.
Right. So, first of all, let's look at contact training for your kids. Is it really ideal for your kids to engage in contact? Well, we know that your kids should not engage in certain sports, such as tackle football, when they're younger. It's not a great idea. We know, for instance, that doing headers in soccer now are really much more dangerous than we ever thought. So, you know, there's some issues involved. All of my kids have been in soccer. And all of my kids were also in martial arts.
Really?
And all of them. They all were in martial arts. They all, you
did
know,
you,
went
did
up.
Did you train them yourself?
Yes, right. Are you kidding? Martial arts. Martial arts.
That was not part of your upbringing.
Not part of,
mine either.
Not part of my childhood training. Definitely not part of my adult training. I think if I went to martial arts, I'd probably last one half of the first session before I would have an injury and then be in bed for the next month. But they all engaged in martial arts. And I think the American Society of Pediatrics brings up a good point that there are injury rates that occur in martial arts that are significant. And they're saying that it's very important that there's no evidence that protective equipment such as helmets and mouth guards and face guards are going to make a difference. And basically, they're looking at the fact that maybe your kids should not engage in martial arts. But I think they're really looking at the contact
right.
that occur with your kids in martial arts. And I think there's martial arts with a small M, and there are martial arts with a big M. And I think when your kids are especially pre-adolescent, you have to look as a parent, and you have to make a decision. In other words, when you take your kids to martial arts, which I think are excellent, I think that it's throwing out the baby with the bathwater if you say, don't let your kids be in martial arts, because I think it really helps with self-confidence and the ability to defend themselves should the occasion arise.
Well, and coordination, and it's exercise. There's a lot of benefits here.
There's no doubt about it. So I'll give a perfect example. My daughter, Vanessa, wonderful, was in college, spent her junior abroad. She was in Argentina. She was in Bolivia, and she was in a situation, she told me about this years later, of course, that was, shall we say, untoward. She was in not a good part of town. I think she was probably in many times in, quote, not a good part of town. And a situation arose where she really had to sort of defend herself. There was no contact involved, but she said she called upon her martial arts training. And when she assumed that position, obviously the position that you gain, position number one or two, whatever they call it, the people who are about to rob her immediately looked at that and left. And so it was something that she did when she was 5 and 7 and 9 and 12 that kept her money there and actually scared away these young kids who were about to attack her in some way. And she said the martial arts came in very, very importantly at that time in her life. So I think not having martial arts for your kids is not a good idea. I think you've got to use your brain as a parent.
Right. So we're seeing in a lot of sports kind of a graduated training. So younger ages for football, they're saying, okay, no direct contact, we're going to avoid head injuries. Soccer, headers, they're starting at a later age. Martial arts, there's training you can do without a head contact in particular. Is that maybe the take-home you hold off?
I think it's the same. And the other take-home is we don't want to go to the other side and sterilize childhood. Mm. That is not a good idea because childhood eventually becomes adulthood. And I can tell you one thing. Adulthood is not a sterile environment.
Well, neither is childhood. I mean, little kids put anything in their mouth.
Absolutely.
And I'm straying off the topic. So you're saying, parents, your kids are in martial arts, it's okay. Maybe trainers think about dialing back some of the contact, especially with the head.
You betcha.
Do you have a question for Zorba? Call in at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go back to our callers now, Zorba. We'll go to Door County, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba and Rob. I was just wondering what Zorba had to say about the notion of eating according to your blood type.
Well, that was a big thing. That was a big thing a while back. Eat according to your blood type. So if you're blood type O negative, here's your diet. If you're AB positive, here's your diet. Have you tried this yourself, first of all?
Best-selling book. Where'd you get the idea?
I'm not sure how it came in front of me just recently, maybe on Facebook or something, but when I saw it, it reminded me that my ex-husband had done that for a while years ago, and he did kind of, he always was a little on the thick side, and he is not any longer, and it's not so much that he stuck with that particular diet, but that kind of got him started on a new way of eating.
Hmm. You know, I like the euphemism he used, a little on the thick side. You know, Wisconsin, we usually say I'm big boned, which is similar to that.
Well, I think we can solve this one. She saw it on Facebook, so it's gotta be legit.
Be true. That's right.
There's gotta be something.
Facebook, everything on Facebook has gotta be true. You know, it was a best selling book. It's a long time ago. I bet it was two decades ago.
Yeah.
I bet it was 2 decades ago. And the idea was that if you're O positive, you should eat one way, and if you're B negative, you should eat another way. There is absolutely no scientific evidence, zero scientific evidence that it does any good. And frankly, now think about it. If the diet really worked, everyone would get their blood type, follow the diet for their blood type, and we would no longer be an overweight society. If we look at the time since the book came out, let's assume it was 2 decades ago, probably 10 to 15% of the population is heavier than they've ever been before. It's hokum. It's quackery. It doesn't work. But for your husband, your ex-husband, excuse me, it must have done something. So, but he must just be changing the way that he eats.
Well, that's the thing. I think a lot of times people, I mean, any diet where you're starting to think about the foods you're eating, maybe as a coincidence with that diet, you stopped eating the bag of Cheetos a day or something. You stopped eating the one thing that was causing you to gain weight, coincidentally, while you're embracing whatever this diet is.
Yeah,
that could be.
I'm sure that Cheetos are not part of anyone's blood type diet. I just want to make clear of that.
Well, my kids think
Cheetos,
it is.
Cheetos, donuts, that's not part of it. How much weight did he lose?
Oh, I don't know. He's a slight man, really, and it wasn't that he was so very overweight, but he just carried a few extra pounds on a regular basis, and now he really doesn't. The only thing I know for sure he changed was now he's pretty much a vegetarian. When I saw him recently, and I was trying to ask him what was the deal with this whole subject matter, and he started going off about food allergy and just like an inflammation that might occur from eating certain foods.
Well, here's my question. Here's my question. Forget about the ex-husband. How about you? Are you worried about what you're eating? Are you looking to make a change?
Well, I could always improve on my diet, but I don't do things called going on a diet, but I try to pay attention, but I always have room for improvement. Mm-hmm. But for my blood type, it talked about some of the foods, some of the very normal foods I eat and I feel good about eating, it suggested I shouldn't be eating, like tomatoes, chicken, you know, wheat. For meat, it suggested I should eat things like mutton. I don't even know what mutton is.
Mutton is just a great word. That's why we're both laughing, I think.
I know.
Mutton.
Zorba, I think, are we? Is she onto something? Should she go with the all-mutton, no-tomato diet?
I don't even know what mutton is, actually.
It's lamb.
It's lamb.
No, it's sheep. Lamb.
It's sheep. Yeah, it's not even lamb.
It's sheep. Oh. And if you've ever had
mutton... lamb.
If you have ever had mutton, I can tell you one thing. It's not the preferred meat in any culture that's eat muttons outside of India, where mutton curry is one of the common things.
You really got to cook that.
No, I think that basically you should, you know, follow what I call the king of diets, which is the Mediterranean diet. Fresh fruits and vegetables, fish should be a major source of protein a couple times a week, you know, cut down on the red meat. But just Google Mediterranean diet, follow that. It's the best diet to eat to follow. It's the best, not diet. It's the best way to eat for cardiovascular health. And as for the all mutton, no tomato diet based on your blood type, that's why the book doesn't sell anymore.
All right. Good luck.
Well, I couldn't wrap my brain around it, so I'm not surprised that you have that point of view.
Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you so much.
I could see, you know, this could have been big on the dating scene.
Yes.
Hey, what's your blood type? Right. And then you know if you can go to the same restaurants together.
Yeah. Well, you just have to, you know what? This is the next thing on Tinder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Blood type and food preference. The one thing I liked about what she says, she doesn't do dieting. She sounds like she finds small improvements to make over time.
Right.
A lot of people, they yo-yo dieting. You've talked about this before.
Right.
Instead of constantly improving their habits.
That's right. Lots of people change their diet, and they really don't change their life. And the answer is they should really change their life. That's the important thing to do.
If you have changed your diet or are trying to, call in now, 1-800-462-7413. Maybe we can give you some advice. Maybe you can inspire someone else if you've done something that succeeded. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's tackle a quick email question. This one came to us from a listener named Jane. And Jane writes, I am working through recovery with a team using the Sinclair method. I believe it's more effective than the 12-step programs.
The Sinclair method.
Sinclair method.
Okay.
My general practitioner is involved, as is a monthly nurse visit to monitor medications and meet weekly with a therapist. What are your thoughts on the Sinclair method?
I have no idea at all with the Sinclair method, none at all. So the real question is, how do you evaluate something like that? And that's really the important thing to do. So first of all, if you go to regular medical sites, I happen to like the Mayo Clinic medical site because I think it's excellent. You do a search for the Sinclair method. Is there anything on there? That's one way to kind of bird dog things. If you only find the Sinclair method, once again, I have no idea, but this is sort of how I determine things. You see, is there any scientific evidence for it? So Google Sinclair method scientific results. And then you find out whether or not there are any referee journals about it. Finally, the third thing is, once again, because you're trying to figure it out, if you don't really know what is going on in it, call your local hospital and speak to the hospital librarian.
Oh.
Hospital librarians are fountains of great knowledge. And you say, hey, I've been talking. I go to St. Mary's Hospital in Madison. That's the hospital I use. Call up the librarian and say, I've heard there's something about the Sinclair method. Can you do any research for me? Librarians at hospitals love to do research, and they will find you information. They are excellent, and that's an excellent way to approach anything that you don't know about.
I never would have thought of that. That is great advice. The hospital, and I'm married to a non-hospital librarian, so that librarian should have been front and center in my mind. Do you have a question for Zorba? Feel free to tweet us, post on our Facebook page, or send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up, along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, it is recipe time again around the holidays. There always seems to be a lot of dips sitting around the table. I'm not insulting anybody's family. Yes, I'm talking about the food on the table. They're not, Zorba, always the healthy addition. You know, a lot of cheese, a lot of fat in our dips. So we're going to try to track down some healthy dip recipes. So let's take a deep dive into some healthy holiday dips.
Right.
These are good.
And it's
okay.
Very good. This is a good time to think about dips. So let's do the first one, basil avocado dip.
I like the sound of that.
So we start out with one avocado peeled and pitted. In other words, you get the avocado out of the inside, scoop it out.
One avocado peeled and pitted. Don't want to eat that pit.
That's right. A quarter, don't even choke on the pits. Absolutely. A quarter of a cup of sunflower seeds raw. You can have either the unsalted or the salted, depending on your taste.
Quarter cup of sunflower seeds.
That's right. But make sure you take, they've got to be shelled.
We could have some really gritty dip here. We leave it in that avocado pit. Leave in the shells.
Dip.
Don't do those
things. That's right. A clove of garlic.
Clove of garlic.
Tablespoonful of apple cider vinegar.
Tablespoon of apple cider vinegar.
Teaspoon of sea salt.
One little tea sea salt.
A tablespoonful of tahini. You know, that's sesame seed paste, very common.
Big tea tahini.
Easy to find in the grocery store. A quarter teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper.
That's just a tiny shaker to a black pepper.
2 cups of fresh basil.
2 cups of fresh basil.
And 1.5 tablespoons of freshly squeezed lemon juice. Do not use reconstituted or frozen. It must be fresh.
1.5 big tea, really freshly squeezed lemon juice.
Okay, now, very complex directions.
All right,
here
let me get my pencil.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Combine the ingredients in a food processor or a blender, swish it around, serve it cold.
Well, now that's easy. That's easy. Just throw that stuff in the blender. Boom. There's your dip.
By the way, this makes a great salad dressing. Great salad dressing.
What am I going to dip in this? I could dip veggies.
You can
dip crackers.
You
I could dip
to.
Chips.
You can
dip tortilla chips. That avocado.
Chips, yeah. I don't think I would dip Cheetos.
Yeah, they'll just break.
They would just break.
They'll be part of the dip.
Okay, edamame hummus. Now, edamame is something I did not come into contact with until I had Japanese food, but edamame is a wonderful taste. If you've never tried edamame, it's good. You get it in the frozen food section of many good grocery stores.
That's edamame, and we're going to make, you said hummus? I call it hummus.
Yeah, well, hummus, it all depends.
I thought hummus was
What did your
soil.
Mother call it?
Well, we didn't have hummus growing. My folks love hummus
you know,
now, but
the grammar,
back the day.
The pronunciation police, the subgroup of the grammar police, are right now sitting down at the computer.
Hummus
sitting
versus
down
hummus.
At this hummus versus hummus. You know, something.
Well, humorous.
It is hummus.
Let us pronounce it the way
it
we
is
want.
Hummus. Hummus is what you put in the ground. I've been saying it wrong for years. Maybe that's why I never eat it, because I say it wrong. When I
Yeah, Mediterranean food is not your friend, because they just keep throwing soil on the plate when you order all that hummus.
It's hummus. It's hummus. All right, now that I've captured my air, 2 cups of shelled edamame frozen. Once again, you can buy this stuff. It's frozen. The shells are out of there. These are the things that you take out of the shell in a Japanese restaurant that you eat while you're waiting for your sushi.
2 cups of shelled edamame frozen. We thaw that first,
That's right.
Though.
Do not use the shells. Once again, they will add fiber and you won't like it.
Gritty.
A third of a cup of water.
Third of a cup of water.
3 tablespoonfuls of rice vinegar.
3 big tea rice
and
vinegar.
It's important to have these different vinegars in your house. They all do taste different, that's for sure. 2 tablespoonfuls of tahini.
2 big tea tahini. So stock up on your tahini for the holidays.
2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
You know, I was reading a cookbook the other day that I used to use that I love called the Silver Palette Cookbook in the 70s. And instead of saying extra virgin olive oil, they said a good grade of olive oil. That's how the language's food has changed.
Yeah, we weren't fussy about olive oil.
It was a good grade of olive oil. 1 clove of garlic minced.
Clove of minced garlic.
1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt.
1/2 little tea of kosher salt.
Ground black pepper.
Ground black pepper to taste.
Okay, a little bit more complex in doing this. In a food processor, combine the edamame, water, rice vinegar, tahini, olive oil, garlic, and 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, and process until smooth. It was more complex because the recipe was longer.
And then we throw on that black pepper, maybe a little extra salt if you want. That's an extra step there.
Okay,
hummus.
Okay.
And I could see, I'm going to put pitas in this one. I'm going to dip pitas.
Pita would be perfect.
That'd be
pita
great.
Pita would be perfect. And once again, no Cheetos on that recipe. All right, dip number 3.
Maybe.
Cilantro, Greek yogurt dip. If you don't like cilantro, if you are
Some
one
people
of those
don't.
People, then you would use parsley in this. Parsley instead of cilantro. Okay, 1.5 cups of plain whole-fat Greek-style yogurt.
1.5 cups plain whole fat Greek style yogurt.
1/4 cup of fresh cilantro. And once again, parsley will substitute. It tastes very different, but it'll still be good.
1/4 cup. I'm going with that fresh cilantro, finely chopped.
2 tablespoonfuls of freshly squeezed lime juice. It's got to be fresh.
2 big tea freshly squeezed lime juice.
2 cloves of garlic, finely chopped.
2 cloves, finely chopped garlic.
And 1/2 teaspoon of the following: cumin, salt, and ground pepper.
1/2 teaspoon of cumin and a little bit of salt, a little bit of ground pepper.
Okay. Very complicated recipe. Now, here are the complicated instructions. Combine the ingredients together, mix it, refrigerate it.
Fantastic. I could see dipping some cucumbers in there, cucumber slices, other broccoli, I bet is going to be. Well, this is a great. These are going to look
these
good.
These are all great.
They're going to look good on
they're
the
all,
table.
They're all look. They all look good, taste good, feel good. And once again, the variety of things you can dip in this in is great. It's great this time of year and great next year too.
And lots of bowls of Cheetos around all these dips. You just can't have too many Cheetos. I can't emphasize that strongly enough. Hey, let's go back to our callers now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. Actually, before we do that, where can people find these recipes? They want to make them.
We can find these recipes on the website, zorbapastor.org. You can find these recipes and other fine recipes. That's zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
All right. Dial up those blenders. And now we'll dial up those callers at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Back to our callers now. We'll go to Arborvita, Wisconsin. Hi.
I'm a 71-year-old grandma with low back pain. I know a lot of 70-year-olds do have low back pain. I have a history of osteoarthritis and arthritic involvement in several of my joints. But in the last year, I've developed low back pain and a problem with the sciatic nerve on the left side. I have had x-rays and an MRI that show subluxation anteriorly of the L4 and L5 and narrowing of the disc space of L3 and 4. And there is central canal stenosis that's encroaching on the neural foramen. I also have cervical spondylosis of C5 to 7 with spurring on C5 to 6. The doctor has suggested I go to a pain clinic for steroid injections, and I am wondering what your opinion is on the efficacy of this treatment.
Sure. What did you do for a living when you worked?
I'm a retired registered nurse.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
That was really specific.
Thank you. Because I'm looking at Rob, and his eyes are kind of opening up, and I'm thinking, this is a healthcare professional. That's exactly
nailed it.
Yeah. And this is a trick question, you see, because she knows part of these answers, and she's going through that.
Well, no, I don't know the answers.
I know just enough
to make all the wrong assumptions.
See, but it's just the way the words kind of rolled off your tongue,
and I
thought to myself, she's a healthcare professional, or she's a medical librarian. One of the two.
I've been around the block a few times.
Okay.
I retired last year.
Obviously, you've been around the block. And as you say, a little bit of information or a lot of information are there. So a couple of very specific questions. What are you doing for exercise every day?
I am still walking a mile and a half.
Excellent.
Every day, no matter what the weather is.
Yeah.
I have a black lab that doesn't care if it's raining or snowing or 20 below. I walk. But I haven't been able to do a lot of the exercises that I have done in the past, and I've gained 10 pounds, which I hate.
Sure.
I also have atrial flutter, so I can't take any NSAIDs.
Uh-huh. You're on atrial flutter, so are you on an anticoagulant?
I am on warfarin.
Okay, you're on warfarin. Do you take arthritis strength Tylenol?
Yes, I do.
How much do you take? How often?
I take 2 in the morning and 2 in the evening.
These are the arthritis strength, the every 8 hour. Okay, they should be 3 times a day. Because they're an 8-hour pill. They're not a 12-hour pill.
Okay.
So you've got to schedule it. I recommend, as close to every 8 hours as you can. But I tell people take 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning when you get up, 2 at night when you go to sleep, and in the middle of the day, take 2 more. I like these little things that attach to your keys because you often have your keys with you. So if it's 2 in the afternoon and you're out somewhere and you go, bing, I got to take my pill, you've got extra pills that are there. You don't want to say, bing. think I've got to take my pill, and it's back at home. That's,
okay.
That's because that'll give you the Tylenol will give you extra relief. Remember,
okay.
You can take up to 4,000 milligrams a day if you drink two or fewer alcoholic drinks a day.
Okay.
If you drink three or four a day or more than that, you can only take three times a day.
You'd be under
well,
the rug.
You'd be
okay.
under the rug, and that
so
would
safe
not
there.
That would not work for you.
No.
Have you been on Lyrica or gabapentin or one of the
yes,
anti?
I am on gabapentin.
How much are you on?
150.
Small dose, not a big dose. What you want to do, gabapentin, you can be on. The maximal dose of gabapentin is 800 milligrams three times a day.
It's wow.
That's the maximum dose. You are on almost a homeopathic dose of gabapentin.
Okay.
So you were, and that is very effective for sciatica. And what happens is if you took the maximal dose, you would be under the rug because it will make you too sleepy.
Oh.
So
okay.
you've got to work yourself up to it. Some can
okay.
tolerate, some cannot. I recommend 300 milligrams at bedtime. And then try to increase it to 300 twice a day. And once again, try to increase that to 300 three times a day. If that doesn't work, you up it gradually to 600, gradually to 800. That may work for your sciatica. I would definitely
okay.
do that before I would have an injection.
And yeah, so what about that? She said a steroid injection at a pain clinic. What do you think about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Well, I would do these things before I would do that.
First.
I would definitely do the gabapentin. Now, are you doing any stretching exercises in addition to that?
Before I even get out of bed in the morning,
mm-hmm.
But I don't do a whole lot of stretching during the day. I'm not a sedentary
mm-hmm.
person.
No,
so.
No, you don't sound like it. You're not sedentary in your brain either
no.
because you're working on it. What I would do before I got an injection, injections can work, but they tend to be temporary.
Right.
And they tend to put it down. I would try the gabapentin because if that doesn't work, then I would consider going to Lyrica. It's name brand. It's more expensive, higher copay. And if you have Medicare Part D, it's expensive when you're in the donut hole, you know,
yeah,
that aspect. But I would try. I would maximize the gabapentin because if it works, it's your go-to drug. And often if you can just get those nerves to settle down for like
okay.
8 to 12 weeks, you can reduce the gabapentin and it'll tend to be better. I would do that before I'd get the shot.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hang on. I've got a question for you because you didn't call in and say, I'm a 71-year-old retired nurse. You said, I'm a 71-year-old grandma. So this is a key part of your identity now, it sounds
yeah,
like.
Grandma is more important than being a nurse. We have 10 grandchildren.
Good luck dealing with this and have a good holiday with all those grandkids.
Thank you.
Thanks for that call at 1-800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page. That would be the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for those following along at home. We scooped up a few of those questions and comments. We're going to share them with you one at a time today, all right? You ready, Zorba?
I am totally ready.
So first up, Andy in Neenah, Wisconsin asks, why does caffeine from coffee improve mood when caffeine from soda does not?
Caffeine from soda makes you fat. Caffeine
because all the sugar that comes with it
makes you thin and much more like it. I mean, think about it. You sit there and you have coffee and you're concentrating because I'm a coffee person. I know how important that is. You can just tell when I think about coffee, I'm passionate. But with a Coca-Cola, come on. You know, it's got the calories. You got to digest the calories. You know, that's
makes you a little logy. Now, it depends on that coffee. If you're getting that super sweet three shots of flavor at your
true.
Local coffee
that
shop
is true.
Chain,
that is true.
That's
that is
maybe
true.
More sugar than that.
That
soda.
That is true. That
could
is
be
true.
Unique to Andy, too. But keep drinking the coffee, Andy, maybe less soda. Next up, Gabby in Wisconsin asks, regarding olive oil and balsamic vinegar, common combination
yes,
in our
of
food,
course, of course.
Is there any hope for those of us who just don't like the taste of those two?
Either olive oil or balsamic vinegar?
Maybe it's the combo. I
yeah,
don't know.
You don't have to use them both together. Sometimes I just have olive oil
sure.
in my salad. I don't have balsamic vinegar. My wife, Penny, loves vinegar. And a lot of times she has vinegar on her salad and she doesn't have olive oil. So, I mean, you know, it's America. It's a free country. You
do what
put
you
whatever
want.
You want to on your salad.
And A, it can be an acquired taste. And B, you can go, there are these fancy stores. They're kind of expensive, but they have like 8 zillion flavors of olive oil and an equal number of flavors of vinegar.
That's right.
So you can
exactly.
mix and match. And they have little tasters.
Or you know what, you can do
sample.
What the French do. And the French often just put a little salt, a little bit of pepper on there, and squeeze some lemon juice or lime on their salad. And they have delicious salads.
That sounds great. Question from Veronica now in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Dr. Zorba, I understand that you were once the Dalai Lama's personal physician. Dalai Lama, famous for his infectious giggle, Did you catch, Veronica asks, did you catch your delightful laugh from him, or were you born with
it? No, I was born with the laugh. And yes, I am
maybe that's
still,
why you got along.
I am still one of the Dalai Lama's physicians. I still see him on a regular basis and help with his care.
Does medical care actually happen amidst all the giggling and chortling?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Yes, it
okay, because that was a clear follow-up question.
He always giggles. He always smiles. He's a happy person.
And finally, Zorba, Steve in Florida writes to us, every once in a while you talk about a connection between music and health. About 25 years ago, a doctor told me to listen to waltz music to reduce anxiety. He said that it puts your thoughts and body rhythms into 3/4 time. So I keep a CD of waltz music. Steve keeps a CD of waltz music in his car. He puts it on when city traffic gets heavy, and Steve says, it works.
Yeah, well,
waltz your way to work.
I think if I put on waltz music in my car, I would have a crash because I would go to sleep. But I think it's okay.
Yeah, and just don't try to waltz with the steering wheel.
Whatever turns you on, whatever turns you on, or with your feet.
Whatever calms you down, Steve. Thank you for that. Let's keep the flood of Facebook comments coming, or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, and another interesting topic, plus our Quacking Up segment, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we take another caller, a topic, this one from the CDC on abortion rates
right,
in the United States.
Right. A tremendous drop in abortions, and I want to talk a little bit about where it comes from, skirting the issues, obviously, that divide society concerning abortion, but it's quite interesting for a whole bunch of reasons. And the reasons are this decline has occurred not only in conservative states where access for abortion is quite limited, but also in liberal states where access to abortion is not, is not limited. And if we look at the abortion rate in 2013, it was 12.5 per 1,000 women, and that is half the rate of what it was in 1980. In other words, the number of abortions has dropped dramatically since 1980. And frankly, the abortion rate has actually dropped to below where it was when Roe v. Wade was actually decided by the Supreme Court. It's very, very interesting data.
So the huge question here, obviously, since this is happening in states with very different laws
very different abortions.
The big question
culture,
is,
what is the issue? Why is this happening? Well, there are a bunch of reasons that it is happening, and a lot of the reasons are good. First of all, there's education. So that young women, most abortions occur in younger women versus older women, finally understand, especially at a very young age, how actually they get pregnant, the timing and everything else that has occurred in there. The next thing that's very important is access to birth control. Under the Affordable Care Act and other issues, access to birth control has become much, much more common. In other words, if there was a copay of $10 or $20, that could be a definite obstacle to a lot of women actually getting birth control. The type of birth control has improved dramatically. We don't just have pills. We have injections like Depo Provera, where you get it every 3 months. We have IUDs, which are put in once every 5 years. We have progesterone sticks, that's sort of the common name for them, which means that you can have birth control as long as you keep them in up to 5 years. So that is another part of it. And then we have more access to adoption, more women who are deciding if they're going to have their child, they're going to keep their child in the family. It doesn't have the same, if you will, stigma that it had before. All of this leads to less abortion, which is actually good for our society in many ways. Once again, I'm not talking about the issues involved, which are political issues. I'm talking about the good things that are happening with birth control and education.
A public health lesson here, maybe for other issues when it comes to prevention.
Well, I think the public health issue is that education plays a role, access plays a role, culture plays a role. All of these things make a difference in society. I think we can all agree that the important thing is that young women and young men should understand what birth control is, have that access available so that they cannot get pregnant when they don't want to get pregnant, because that's the most important thing, to keep that abortion rate down.
Let's go to our callers now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We'll go to Logan, Utah now. Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. How can we help you out today?
So I just have a question. I had this issue for about 6 years. About 6 years ago, I took about a 10-foot fall while I was rock climbing. Ooh. I was training pretty heavily and climbing, rock climbing a lot. And so when I fell, I thought I'd broken my arm. It was so, so painful. But because I was training and I was young and I was 21 at the time, I just kept training and I couldn't do pull-ups anymore because of the pain. So I started doing a lot of push-ups. And
so wait a second. Training, you couldn't do pull-ups, you had because you had the injury, so instead you did push-ups.
I know, it's so bad.
Wait, I want to back up a little more. You said you think you broke your arm. Did you go
to get medical, anything? No, so what happened was
Just wrapped some duct tape around it and got back on the hill?
Kind of. I put some ice on it. I mean, it was really painful at the beginning, or you know, right after it happened, and then I iced it, and I was whatever, and I mean, like I said, I was dumb. I was going to Europe to climb, and I was like, I'm not going to let this slow me down. So instead of resting it, going to see a doctor, that kind of thing, I knew essentially that I would have to rest it, and so I avoided going to the doctor. So anyway, eventually, I kept training on it. I was a river guide. I rode on it for, about 8 months. And then finally it just got so bad that I thought, okay, I'm going to rest. I'm going to go to the doctor and get x-rays. Did the whole thing. Got an MRI. It showed that I had medial epicondylitis and I just kind of some mini tears in my tendons there as well as tendonitis. And then they gave me a cortisone shot, mm-hmm. which actually had a reaction to it, and it ate away all the tissue surrounding the bone.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And so it was terrible. Mm-hmm. Then
awful.
I went through this, I've gone through physical therapy for, 4 months at a time. Nothing's happened. My strength has, decreased. And then I've kind of gone back and forth from resting. And now I do a lot of yoga. I still rock climb. But the biggest issue now, I still have pain in my elbow, but the pain has seemingly migrated up into my shoulder,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if I have a separate injury, because I have been diagnosed, like I said, with the medial epicondylitis and the radial, and then mm-hmm. now radial tunnel syndrome, but I just have this really intense pain in the deltoid tricep and mm-hmm. trapezoid mm-hmm. muscles.
Well, you had this injury, so did you have your shoulder checked out? Have you ever had plain x-ray of the shoulder at all?
No, and I have, because it just started out with the elbow, it was just probably in the last 2 years that my shoulder has been really taking the brunt of it. So I'm just wondering, kind of what my next step might be.
I've got a plan for you. Number one,
okay.
You need an x-ray and an MRI. You've got to find out what's going on in your shoulder. Is there something there? Now, you're going to find abnormalities. You're a climber. You've had injuries. You've got abnormalities. When you injured yourself there could be something there. Do not expect it to be pristine. It will not. But there are lots of things you see on MRI that don't have any meaning. In other words, you've got a curriculum vitae from your body. So if you look at your body after a certain number of years, it's going to have injuries to it. Doesn't mean those injuries are causing the problem. Next step after that is to go to a good trainer physical therapist to find out what exercises to do and, more importantly, what you should not be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So the
mm-hmm.
question is, can you continue to engage in your sport? The answer is, I don't know. There's a trade-off. Can you continue to do it because you've got, because the cortisone shot ended up destroying some tissue in your elbow? We know that is a side effect of cortisone. That's why we're super careful when we give it. It can happen. It happened to you. The real issue is, how serious is it? Can you continue to do that, or do you have to take up a different sport? That's the hard question you have to answer, because I know you want to continue to rock climb. Otherwise, you wouldn't have done those push-ups after you had the injury. That's pretty obvious to me. I'm not saying that you're going to have to go to ballroom dancing, but there may be something else that you may have to go to. And then you make the decision whether or not you want to be in pain with your sport or out of pain and do something else. But you can't do that without the MRI, the scan, and an evaluation by a trainer and a physical therapist. There may be things you're doing that are wrong that are making things worse. And that's why you've got somebody with a good eye who knows what they're doing to see exactly what you're doing with your exercise plan and your sport.
Yeah, for sure.
Sound like a plan?
Okay, yes. Thank you so much for taking my call and for giving me this advice.
And if you keep rock climbing just to prove, you know, that you're tough, we're convinced. You've already persuaded us. We will not judge you if you end up stopping.
Yes, you have.
Oh, brother. Okay.
Well, good luck.
Well, thank you so
you're
much.
Welcome.
Thank you for that call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, before we go back to our callers, let's take another dive into the murky waters of medical quackery. It's time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, for today's Quacking Up segment, tell us about a guy named Dr. Cameron. As some people have called him, and I think we're cleaning up the language here a little, the pee prophet.
That's right, the pee prophet. That's the word we can say on public radio. It is acceptable. We could also call him the urine prophet.
The urine
but
prophet.
That wouldn't sound nearly as good as the pee prophet. And he was a 17th century guy who made tons of money on Oxford Street in London, saying that he could tell exactly what was going on in your body by examining your pee. Now, we know from years ago with that looking at urine, thinking about urine, smelling the urine, tasting the urine has been very important in medicine. We know that diabetes basically was from people tasting the urine and finding out it tasted sweet. And that's when young people, of course, had juvenile diabetes, the old-fashioned term type 1 that we used to call it. And they would die and their urine would taste sweet. We didn't know exactly why back in Hippocrates' time, but they knew it was there. Looking at the urine can be important. Looking at the froth, we look at it, you know, we do dipsticks in the urine. But he was someone special. He charged lots of money. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, I can tell what your chest pains are from urine. I can tell why you're losing weight from your urine. I can tell everything about your urine. And so lo and behold, there was a guy who said, we're going to find out exactly how you do this, and took the urine from a donkey.
Not a human. A donkey.
A donkey. So he was asking questions about the age of the patient. Patient was 24. Had he worked hard? Well, of course, the donkey lifted heavy weights. Was he a drinker? Of course, the answer was he drank a pail of water twice a day. And Cameron diagnosed a bad back, at which point the guy who was tricking him said, aha, it was the urine of a donkey. And he uncovered the quackery that was there, and he was happy. But I think Dr. Cameron and continued to make his money on Oxford Street because, from what I can tell, he died a wealthy man.
Well, now, wait a minute. Donkeys do hard work. They drink a lot of water. Maybe he wasn't that
far
off.
And they do have a bad back. But you know what? Quackery!
Quackery. This is not a common procedure in American medical offices. The tasting of the patient's urine.
The tasting of the urine is not
that would be keeping a lot of people out of med school if it were otherwise.
They definitely would.
Well, back to our callers now. Zorba at 1-800-462-7413. We'll go to Tex Arcana, Arkansas now. Hi there.
Good day, Dr. Zorba. How are you?
Good. Very good. How can we help you?
Well, okay. The question I have is not actually for myself, but it's for my brother. He is 52 years old, and he has never had a prostate exam. And the last time he was with me the other day, he was peeing, you know, really excessive, like 5 or 6 times a day. I mean, not a day, excuse me, an hour. And I had said something to him about needing to get a prostate exam. Is there a difference between just a PA test and a prostate exam?
Well, what he needs to be seen, if you're peeing 5 times an hour,
that's a lot.
If you're peeing 5 times a day, that is not a lot. In fact, the number per day generally before an overactive bladder is less than 8, is about 8 or fewer times per day. So not counting the nighttime pees, but let's go back to him. He needs to find out what's going on. He could have a bladder infection. Could have a kidney infection, could have a prostate infection, could have an enlarged prostate. Anything in the urinary system could cause it. But that's a lot of times. How does he do anything if he's peeing 5 times a day? And frankly, how does he go out of the house and walk down the street if he's urinating that much?
Exactly, and that was my point to him. And I was saying, Bart, you need to go and get checked because you could have a problem. I said, you are 52 years old.
That's right. And now, it doesn't mean his prostate is the problem. He needs to get a urine test, and then the physician has to decide if he needs his prostate examined.
Not by tasting the urine. The urologist will not taste it.
Not
Let's be clear on that. Okay.
I take it that he's concerned that he's going to need a prostate exam because the prostate exam is done through the rectum. So that's probably his fear, right?
Yes, I'm sure it is. But is there a difference also from just a PA? Is that a blood test, isn't it?
You mean somebody
who would see? The PSA, maybe? The PSA test?
Oh, the PSA test.
The PSA.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
yes,
the
sir.
PSA test is the test you're looking for. Yeah, but the first thing you would do with somebody urinating this much is you wouldn't do a PSA test. The first thing you would do is examine the urine. PSA test is a blood test. But if he's urinating 5 times an hour, he needs a urological examination at the doctor, and he needs a urine test to find out what's going on. So are you close to your brother?
Yes.
Does he listen to you when you make suggestions?
He does, but like you said, I believe it's just a fact that having to go in.
Well, you telling me probably does not need to have his... He may be able to make the decision without having his prostate checked. I noticed that Rob is now using the hand signal for the prostate.
Sorry, it's in my head now.
It's using the hand
signal. Well, but so if he won't just listen to you, will he listen to you backed up by Dr. Zorba?
I'm going to help for, if he will.
Okay. Well, good luck getting him to get to a doctor and get that checked out.
He needs to see a doc.
Thank you so much.
You're
welcome. All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for calling. Before we head out today, Zorba, we don't mind taking our lumps from the grammar police or debating issues during our disagreeing with the doc segment. But now and then, it's just nice to hear that we're doing a good job. So the following email came to us from Bill in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Bill writes, "Hi, Zorba. On your program a while back, you recommended Excedrin Migraine. I tried it. It has changed my life. I don't need it a lot, but when I do, it works every time. Nothing else has worked like it. If I take it at the early signs of a migraine, it knocks the migraine out. No more migraine spiraling out of control into vomiting. Thank you," Bill says,
"vomiting.
For pointing me in the right direction."
How wonderful is that?
That is great.
Thank you.
Migraines,
that is fantastic.
No fun.
That is fantastic.
I'm glad
migraines
that helps.
Are awful. Anything to get rid of migraines are great.
All right, Bill. Hope that keeps working for you. Has Dr. Zorba helped you out? Share your story with us. Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org. Or remember, you can always find us through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1209Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.